Welcome to a Monday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, the Heat lose 5 of their last 6, LeBron hangs 51, and Josh Richardson throws a shoe. We'll talk about a frustrating loss to the Lakers.
And how can the Heat turn things around? That's the million-dollar question we'll try to answer. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm joined, as always, with David Ramil. The Heat lost to the Lakers Sunday night, 113-97, as LeBron put up 51 points and gets his first win in Miami since leaving in 2014. LeBron dominated start to finish, and things were ugly for the Heat from start to finish. They couldn't keep up the Lakers' pace and didn't execute any sort of noticeable game plan, and this team is clearly frustrated. They've lost now 5 of their last 6 games. This was their 4th straight loss at home. Josh Richardson is throwing shoes into the stands. How much of this, David, was LeBron doing LeBron things, and how much of this can you put on the Heat just not being very good?
I'm going to cop out here and go 50-50. I think, yeah, seriously, I really do think it's an equal share of Miami not being very good and not being engaged in this particular game when they needed to be, and LeBron having a dominant performance. I think maybe Miami's poor performance could have pulled out a victory if they hadn't had a superstar player like LeBron, a historically great one, go supernova and score 51 points. But they also gave up a season high to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. They gave up key baskets in key moments. They just never seemed to shift momentum in their favor. So while you have to give credit to LeBron for doing having a hell of a game, Miami just overall sucking really contributes pretty mightily to that big loss.
I think you're right. Look, I mean, LeBron's going to do what LeBron does, and he's got this tendency of getting up for games that he deems important to himself, right? I mean, if he's on ESPN or TNT, he's going to get up for that game. And look, he's heard the things about him not being able to win in Miami since he's left, and he's like, you know what? I'm done. I don't have to feel bad because Dwayne Wade's not going to be
good
here.
Good point.
Udonis Haslam's not going to play, you know, so I can come out and dominate and I don't have to feel like I'm going to embarrass any of my friends because I don't care about any of these guys on the Heat right now.
Right.
So, you know, I think that he came out with an intensity and that we really hadn't seen a whole lot during the season from LeBron on this Lakers team.
No.
You could tell he wanted it tonight. And when he gets like that, we saw it for 4 years. When he gets like that, you're not going to be able to stop him. The most you could do is try to get in his way a little bit. And unfortunately, look, the Heat threw a lot of different guys at him. They had Justice Winslow on him, James Johnson on him. Ronnie Magruder got switched onto him a few times. Bam Adebayo got switched onto him a few times. No, it doesn't matter. LeBron is LeBron. I don't think that anybody did a great job against him.
No.
But I don't know that anybody also got... I don't think anybody got necessarily dominated by him either. I think they just did as well as you could do. He made some tough shots tonight. I mean, he made 19 of his 31 shots. Six of eight from three-point range was just – he is – it's ridiculous how he's becoming – they put up – I think the Heat broadcast put up a graphic at one point. It's like him, Steph Curry, and Kyrie Irving are the only guys that are shooting like 50-plus percent on more than 5 three-point attempts per game this season or something crazy like that. Like – basically, LeBron is in sort of like the same class as Steph and Kyrie when it comes to three-point shooting, which is insane.
Yeah, that's not the player he was in Miami, that's for sure. Although he had evolved as a shooter during his four-year stint here, now he's become
almost... We saw the start of it.
Yeah, he's become almost an elite-level shooter now. 6 of 8 is just indefensible. I mean, there were shots there where he was 27 feet away from the basket, and that's a kind of range that you expect a guy like Curry to put, you know, to stretch the floor with, not a guy like LeBron James. But, you know, when he's dialed in, as you said, it's indefensible.
You said almost elite. I'm ready to be there right now. I think this season he has become an elite three-point shooter. Like, it's not like, you know, before with LeBron, especially Miami, he was streaky, right? He had that 1 year, I think, was it 2013, where he shot like 48% from three-point range or something like that. Maybe it was 2012. He's a legit, like, it looks good. Like, that form is like, it's crystal clear. It looks like he's an elite three-point shooter. Like, he's not as good as Steph, but nobody ever has been. But he's really good. It's incredible what he's been able to do. And as far as Miami goes, look, they just didn't have the one guy like the Lakers did. And when you don't have that one guy to just sort of play through the entire game, this is a team that has struggled with its identity. And, you know, there are nights when Whiteside can get going or nights when Josh Richardson can get going, but when nobody's going, it's just sort of a bunch. Like, you look at what the Lakers had, right? 51 points from LeBron, obviously, but Brandon Ingram had 13, Kyle Kuzma had 15. Like, Miami was basically just a whole team of Kyle Kuzmas,
yeah,
and they didn't have a LeBron, you know? And that's just sort of been the story this whole time.
Yeah, their leading scorer was Wayne Ellington, and that's, you know, a shooter that you can't necessarily count on, and he's had a number of games that he's lost to an injury, and he's kind of rounding into form, and you can't really count on Ellington. That was the case too often last season, where he was there, an emergency, in case of an emergency, you broke open Wayne Ellington and hoped that he could bail you out of a tough situation. This isn't that. They were underwhelmed from the start, they were in too deep a deficit, and they were relying on Wayne just to kind of tread water, and that wasn't nearly good enough. 19 points from Wayne, fantastic shooting night for him, 5 of 11 from three-point range. Not great, perhaps, but really, really good. 7-14 overall. He had some nice drives to the rim. I saw that. He was matched up on Ingram a lot. I saw him taking advantage of the longer, slower Ingram, I think, and drove past him to get to the rim a couple times. So that was nice to see. But yeah.
I'm starting to worry that, you know, Ellington, you mentioned he helped the Heat just sort of tread water for a long time. I'm starting to worry that Ellington's impact on this team is a little overstated, and that at best he is just that. Like, he just helps the Heat tread water for a bit. Like, he's like a release valve, like an easy way,
yeah,
to just sort of chuck up a bunch of three pointers because it can get him off so fast. I don't know that he necessarily impacts winning. Does that, like, am I being too harsh? I haven't like, when was the last
What's
time
his net rating,
won the Heat a game for that?
I know his net rating is not so good.
Minus 18.
Well, in the game, but overall over the course of the season. I mean, it's just, sure, he gives up points on defense. That's the reality of it. He's not strong enough to match up. He's not quick enough to match up with quicker guards. So he's in that kind of nebulous area there. He does, however, heat up quickly, and he can put up a high volume number of shots. And sometimes they fall in, or again, in the case of tonight, you know, shooting under 50% is not great. I mean, it's fantastic. It's not necessarily the kind of 6 of 8 shooting from LeBron that you would have needed for a much more efficient performance from him. Just enough to, again, stay with the Lakers and keep it close. Look, let's not take away from the fact that with over three minutes left to play, the Heat were only down 8, and then they just collapsed. I think the Lakers went on a 14-1 run from that point, and it was pretty brutal.
Thank God for LeBron, because if it wasn't for him just dominating, this would have been one of the most boring games to watch all season. There was nothing from the Heat that I really cared to, like, this was one of the hardest Heat games to watch,
yeah,
just from their execution standpoint of all season. Like, if LeBron hadn't been there, I don't know how I would have watched all four quarters of this thing. Like, just being able to, like, this was a really frustrating game. If you're a Heat fan and you just want to see this team execute any sort of game plan, like I mentioned at the top here, I don't know what the game plan was. I really don't. Like, I have no. Was it to get out in transition with the Lakers? Was it try to play with that pace? Was it try to slow it down? I have no idea. Like, I don't. Was the idea to launch a bunch of threes because they shot about their average 32? It's right. Like, I think they average 33 a game. Like, I don't know what the game plan here. And I'm not necessarily blaming Spo.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was a game plan. It's really frustrating, and I've got a rant about Hassan Whiteside that I want to get to in the next segment, but let's just get to the next segment. We'll talk about what went right and what went wrong when we come back. We'll get to your Twitter questions later on, but first, and even before we get to what went right and what went wrong, which we usually do in the second segment of our recap shows, I need to just let it all out, David.
Sure.
I can't do the Hassan Whiteside thing for 60 more games. I can't freaking do it. He was not the reason the Heat lost tonight, but he also was definitely not the reason the Heat were even in this game at any point. Look, we know what this team is, right? Like, I am not playing the wait and see thing anymore. Like, there is nothing to see. There's nothing to see. Like, we know what this team is. It's been the same team for 3 years. We know what this team is. The only thing that's changed a little bit is the hierarchy of talent. Like, Josh Richardson and Ronnie Magruder have gone substantially up the ladder as far as the pecking order.
Yeah.
But that's the only development this entire year, and neither of those guys is good enough to lead you to a playoff series. So if this team is going to be what it is, and it is going to be what it is, we found that out after the Heat decided not to trade for Jimmy Butler, then I at least need it to be entertaining. I need it to at least be watchable. I need to at least feel good about the product that they're putting on the floor. And I can't do that when Whiteside is playing. We had high hopes that maybe he'd walk into the season, set really great screens, maybe make a couple three-pointers, maybe evolve as a player, learn more from that rocky playoff performance and off-the-court stuff of the postseason. None of that crap has happened. Like, it's the first couple weeks of the year of the season, yeah, he sets better screens. But holy crap, David. Like, in this game, he took so many bad shots again. Like, it's just, he's really struggles in this fast-paced game where I think he just sort of gets all amped up and rambunctious, and he just starts, every time he gets the ball, he's like, we're playing fast, and he just shoots, he shot puts something at the rim area, and that's it. And I just, he shouldn't be playing like that, and I'm sick of it, man. I can't do it. Like, it is so freaking frustrating, and I don't mean to just lump all of my frustrations onto Whiteside. That's probably a lot of what I'm doing here, but get this guy off the team, because I can't do it anymore. And I do think that there will be an addition by subtraction element to this, where you can put Bam and Olynyk more at the five, get them more minutes, play a faster pace. Again, it's not Whiteside's fault that Miami is so bad right now, but I think that if you sub them out for Olynyk or Bam and you're able to play a more modern style of basketball, I think that kind of will raise the tide for this team a little bit. I don't know. I know that Pat Riley, according to reports, tried to trade Whiteside over the offseason. I don't know what the price was. I don't know if he was looking for a lateral move. I don't know if he was trying to improve the team. Trade him for anything. And honestly, if you can't trade him for anything, stretch him. Wave and stretch him. And I know it's expensive, but freaking do it. Like, it is, the Heat will be better without Hassan Whiteside.
I'm not sure that that's the case, to be honest with you. Look, I'm frustrated too. He had a really bad night. You could say that he had some positives. He had two assists. He did have three blocks, seven rebounds in 27 minutes. That's not nearly good enough.
Three blocks out of the 23 he chased. Like, that's a bad ratio.
He did go 2 of 9. And I'm looking at it right now, and a game like this kind of highlights it really well. He's not polished at all. He has no polished offensive game whatsoever. And I think the player that he was a few years ago was just so much more overtly physical and explosive in his athleticism. Mm-hmm. And that was at a point in time when the league was making that transition towards small ball. And I think he was able to dominate because of that incredible athleticism. And the league has somewhat caught up to where Whiteside's athleticism was a few seasons ago as his skills have diminished. And so all of a sudden now the center position has a number of athletic players. Look at JaVale McGee. He's not an elite center by any stretch of the imagination, but his athleticism, even at this point in his career, is enough to match up with Whiteside pretty evenly. Even Tyson,
he can play over the rim.
Yeah.
Whiteside can't play over the rim. I mean, and he used to play under the rim, and he can't play under the rim anymore. He can't play near the rim. His percentages are way low, and shouts out to Azam on Twitter. We were talking about this during the game. Like, you just look across the board at all of his clips, and they're bad. They're low.
I think he can play a backup role. It's getting him to buy into it. If he can come in and be like
somewhere
a super
else.
Sub. No, I mean, I think the reality is having him as a super sub here would be fine. But he just needs to go in there for 10, 15 minutes a game, get 20 touches in that short span, and make the most of those. Because otherwise, he's going to be unplayable.
But I hear you, and I agree with you. But we know that Whiteside is just, he'll have a problem with that. And I'm so sick of him. Like, Dwayne Wade could take a lesser role. Udonis Haslem could take a lesser role. And Whiteside can't do it. And we've tried getting him to do it. Even going back to the Amari Stoudemire experiment. Like, eventually he got really frustrated and he becomes an issue in the locker room. And it's just like, you know what? You're not even that good as a backup for you to warrant being on the team. I'm just sick and tired of the Heat not only being held hostage by his personality and his stubbornness, but also just his general style of play, which is not his fault. It's just he's a dinosaur. He's not. I think this thing is over. I think the Whiteside experiment failed. And look, even the defensive rating stuff, which was up at the beginning of the year, like his on-off stats, which, oh look, he's actually impacting things on defense. That's regressed. The Heat are worse when he's on the floor now. They are better when he's off the floor defensively. Like, it's just that, and that's just because guys like Bam and Olynyk can switch and play faster and get out onto the perimeter, which Whiteside can't. And I'm over it. And look, I did the math, David. $9 million a year for the next 3 years to pay Whiteside not to be here anymore.
It's worth it.
He could go. It's worth it, and he can. And maybe he couldn't. He can be a backup, but he could go be a backup for some other team, not here. And he could collect his $9 million plus his minimum salary somewhere else. But $9 million a year for a team that doesn't have cap space anyway? Fine. Sign me up. We're like, let's just do it. Like, get rid of him. I'm done. Anyway, that's my rant. I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot more. But did anything go right? Let's try in this game, David.
James Johnson came back. I mean,
there we go.
I think that's about it. You could say that maybe Ellington's performance was pretty good. I don't know.
James Johnson missed his first two shots, but then he started to get going. I liked what I saw from him. I thought he moved better than I expected him to. Maybe that's credit Miami's patience in bringing him back, right? Yeah. He made a couple of those three-pointers that he loves, like right just that straight-on jumper from the top of the arc.
Yeah.
He made a couple of those. I thought he looked good. His handle looked good. He was bringing the ball up. He was aggressive. I thought he looked good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a low bar, but that's where we are at this point. See, this feels a lot like 11-30.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. That kind of frustration, like from our, just even from the technical standpoint of this podcast, trying to find some positives on a night like tonight, it's very difficult. And you're just seeing a very sluggish level of play. Last time it was Rodney's insertion into the starting lineup and him bringing some juice that was missing there. Dion kind of coming into his own and Johnson finding a role off the bench. I don't know what we're going to find. I mean, Dion's not available. Rodney's already a starter. It's kind of tough to see where this team goes here from here because I don't know that there's a clear path.
I think it sort of relates to one of our Twitter questions that we have coming up. So let's get to those Twitter questions next. For our recaps, we head to Twitter to answer some of the questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOE. This first one comes from Jeff. Jeff asks, how many games is until it's fair to have expectations for James Johnson? This is interesting. I think, you know, given that he hasn't played, it takes a few games to get back into playing shape and playing
conditions.
Okay, but
let's define what those expectations are, right? Isn't that the first step to this?
Any expectations? I mean, he only played 15 minutes, right? And this is a guy who played 30-ish a game last year. So expectations that he plays like he did tonight, which was fine, and but does it for about 30 minutes a night-ish, like, or is capable, depending on how the whole front court situation shakes out. But I think maybe a couple of weeks. So
I think sooner than that. I mean, I think he can round into form probably. Well, maybe by the end, by the start of next week, let's say. I think that'll.
So 1 week.
Yeah.
So I think that's fair.
Another two games. They've got another two games this week, and then hopefully by the end of that stretch, he'll be somewhat more into form.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and then hopefully by then he's just doing the things that James Johnson does, where he's just constantly moving around the floor, setting screens, handling the ball a little bit, setting up teammates. I think he's going to be a really big addition for this team. I think that the Heat really did miss him, especially because what he can do in helping Kelly Olynyk play more five.
Oh, wait, I've got it.
Just giving you a different look on the front court.
November 25th, a week from today, we're filming this on Sunday the 18th after the Lakers game at Toronto, an opportunity for him to show his former team what they're missing. Hopefully he finds some energy against that. If he's looking for inspiration, that's as close as you're going to get.
Going one-on-one with Kawhi Leonard. He'll show them who's better. Kevin asks, what is it going to take for Pat Riley to make a trade?
Oof.
Okay, so I thought about this. And look, there's a lot of layers to this question. But what is it going to take, right? Well, first of all, I don't think it's going to take anything that he hasn't already seen. It's not going to take this team being better or worse than it is right now, because I think Pat Riley's already decided, because he's a sane person from all of what we understand, that this ain't it. That this team is not the road to whatever he wants to go. So I think he's already decided that, hey, he needs to shake things up. I think what it's going to take is not that, but it's going to take timing, right? And look, the Heat are in the soft part of his schedule right now with games against Brooklyn, Chicago, Atlanta, Orlando, and Phoenix, all coming up in five of the next
Orlando's
eight
not
games.
A soft push anymore.
And neither is Brooklyn, but I'm trying here.
Okay.
Those are five of those eight games are that could be winnable, right? I think that they could be winnable, right? Then on December 7th, the Heat go on a 6-game West Coast road trip. Oh. Okay, so all the California teams, I think they play Utah. I think there's another Texas team in there. And that ends the day after the December 15th kind of cutoff point or start point, really, mm-hmm. of when players who signed as free agents this last summer are eligible to get traded. Right, so they end that last day of the road trip is December 16th. On December 15th, any player or most players who signed as free agents this last summer can get traded. That's the target date. I think there's more than a likely chance the Heat will be 6, 7, 8 games under 500 by then, with a little bit more than 50 games to go in the season. So if Riley wants to make anything out of this year, and if he hasn't seen enough yet, he'll have seen enough by then, is what I'm trying to say here. And I think that you open up a lot more players that are eligible to get traded and a lot more deals sort of get unlocked there. I think we could start seeing things by the end of December, maybe early January, Miami starting to make some moves.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I don't think there's a trade to be made, to be honest with you. I'm at a point.
Even just trying to get under the luxury tax, like just selling off like a Wayne Ellington salary or something like that, just to get under the tax.
Okay.
Like maybe like any move.
Maybe, but is that the kind of move that Kevin's asking about? I mean, again, he didn't qualify that, so we don't know for certain. We're assuming. I think most of our listeners and bless every one of our Twitter followers for actually having the wherewithal to stay with this version of the Heat and still submit questions. We're very, very lucky to have you, to be honest. And I'm not sure, but I think from their perspective, it seems like there's just so much frustration. They're looking for a major trade, I think, to either clear the roster completely or acquire a superstar. Because the Butler trade fell through, there's an even more level of a higher level of frustration there. I think that's what they're hoping for. I may be wrong about that, but that would be.
And if that's the case, then what is it going to take for Riley to trade a Tyler Johnson or a Whiteside contract?
Yeah.
Another, like a 31st NBA team, maybe?
That's not going to happen. Yeah, there's no right. trade for them. We've been talking about this for months, it seems. I remember last year talking about this. Yeah. It's been a long, long time. It's unrealistic to think anybody's willing to take on Tyler's contract. It's not that he's a bad player. It's just that he's not worth the kind of money that he's going to get paid. And Hassan, as we talked about just now, is virtually untradeable. I mean, not virtually. He is untradeable. I don't know who wants that skill set at that kind of money at this point in the career. I mean, it's at this point in the league, at this point of the evolutionary of the NBA.
Wave and stretch.
Yeah.
Wave and stretch.
That's an alternative. Look, I mean, if a team like Portland wants to give him a flyer at a minimum salary, that's fine. I'm sure he could provide a boost there. But I don't even know that he could fit anywhere, to be honest with you.
Not a $25 million.
No, not even. I'm talking even at a minimum salary. Who offers him a chance? If the Lakers hadn't brought on Tyson Chandler, and they had waived Hassan Whiteside, would LeBron have taken a chance to add Whiteside as a minimum level player?
I think somebody would give him a chance at a minimum level, like Washington or Charlotte or Portland. Even makes sense.
And Hassan Whiteside,
a team dealing with some injuries. Maybe even Brooklyn, like just a team that's banged up and at the center position at the minimum, because then you could just waive him. If he sucks and he just walks in that locker room like he's the next greatest thing since sliced bread, you'd be like, no, you're not. You're out of here. Take your $1 million and leave. Like, it's fine. And he could just make a career of just walking into locker rooms,
this
making
probably
a fool of himself and collecting paychecks from like several other NBA teams.
This probably isn't news here, but I'm starting to think about everything that's happened, and I think the departure of LeBron James in 2014 and then Dwayne Wade in 2016 just kind of broke Riley. At one point, he was the guy able to dictate terms as far as trades were concerned or contracts for players, and I think he just became a little bit more desperate than he needed to be. And that's why he
100%.
That's why he gave away the money that he did to Hassan, to James Johnson, to Dion Waiters, everybody else, just to kind of say, no, stay with us. We have a chance to build something there. Because I feel like he was just broken and he didn't want to lose out on those players and have whatever they had accomplished in between 2014 and 16 be for nothing. I don't know. It's weird because you look at Hassan Whiteside, and he had an offer to go to Portland, right? Or Dallas? I can't remember who it was. Take it. Like, if you could go back in time, obviously you would say take it. Take that money. And you would let Tyler Johnson
Pat,
walk
take
through.
Take the reins back, Pat. Just wave and stretch Whiteside. Send a message. It's done.
Yeah.
You're not going to be held hostage by anybody's emotions or demands who can't really shouldn't be playing in the first place. Look, we decided to recap Sunday's game against the Lakers for today's Monday show instead of the mailbag that we usually do on Mondays, but the mailbag will be up tomorrow, so that'll be up Tuesday morning. But that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and subscribing on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen. As always, you can reach us by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Russ.